down trends.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
Be as gods, you know, catapulted propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed foot-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
We may never understand it perfectly this side of heaven, but fulfilled prophecy, prophecies that have already come to pass, one of the key reasons we know that the Bible is absolutely true. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. We continue our series of interviews recorded at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, July 15th through the 17th of 2016. They very graciously allowed me to capture the audio from these and spin them out over the period of about 3 months or so. And coincidentally, about the time we run out of interviews, the videos will be available as part of the DVD set being produced from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. 53 presentations in all, plus a couple dozen 15-minute interviews or thereabouts, all available as part of that package. I'll tell you more about that at the conclusion of our interviews. But today we talk with a couple of experts on Bible prophecy, New York Times bestselling author Joel Richardson, and we begin tonight with Pastor Tom Hughes.
There was a television personality in the 1950s who made the rounds of the late-night talk show circuit. He claimed to be able to predict the future, which, of course, he said was something that we were all interested in because that's where we'll spend the rest of our lives. But Bible prophecy gives us a glimpse into the future. And the difference between the Bible and this fellow who I can't even remember from the 50s is that the Bible is actually true. Joining us is a gentleman who served as a longtime pastor. He's 11 years at the 412. Is it 412 or 412?
412.
The 412 Church in San Jacinto?
Jacinto.
Jacinto. Okay, I've understood.
You can also say Jacinto.
But that's if you're serving on the USS San Jacinto. Yeah. And he hosts a weekly program called Today in Prophecy. His new book is America in the New World Order, The History of Tomorrow, which sort of explains the lead-in. Tom Hughes. Tom, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here, Derek. This is fantastic. In fact, thinking about what you opened up with, I can't help but remember the words of the Lord where he predicts the end from the beginning. We know because of the Bible exactly what is coming, and that's what makes it so exciting, too.
Yes, it is. We're seeing it as through a glass darkly, as the Apostle Paul wrote, but we know that there are certain key things to be watching for. We're seeing some of these things apparently manifest in the world around us. We were talking before the recording about the recent terror attacks in Orlando and Dallas and Nice, France, which just occurred just prior to this recording. What do you see as you're looking at these events in the news for your program, Today in Prophecy? What are the key indicators that you see that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think there's many things that are taking place right now. You can look at the increase of earthquakes. You can look at the increase of pestilence. You can start going right through everything Jesus talked about in all of the discourse and recognize all these things are increasing like birth pains. But what we're watching right now in our world is this increase of lawlessness and also nation against nation, which is comes from the Greek word ethnos, where we get our term ethnic or people groups. So in Europe, you have this mass migration of a people group that is devastating Europe. And you read everything about that with the mass immigration of the Muslims. Yes, there's going to be terrorist attacks. There's going to be a lot more terrorist attacks that are coming. And so you have that. In the United States, we have people group issues, not just from the immigration, but now we are really witnessing the race relations.
And the Dallas situation.
The Dallas situation, just for example. And we're watching these things increase. But Jesus said nation against nation, people group against people group. It is increasing at an alarming rate unless you know Bible prophecy. You know the direction these things are going to go. Mm-hmm. But also with this, Derek, I am absolutely convinced. In fact, I did this on a program recently, talked about this subject. As we were watching the terror attacks, I'm absolutely convinced that these things are going to be the excuse, the motivator, and the catalyst to push forward with a new world order.
Yes.
Because people are not going to put up with going out into the public and having the threat of a Disneyland being hit with a terror attack or their children, something going on with them. What we're watching happen in Europe, and I believe that the terror attacks are only going to increase. What we're watching, I am absolutely convinced, is going to develop into what will become the revived Roman Empire.
Yes. In fact, I just talked with Bill Salas, and I'll get a chance to ask him about this now face-to-face, but we talked last week for my podcast about that very topic, the impact of Brexit on the revived Roman Empire,
yep.
the prophesied empire that will give birth to the Antichrist.
Right.
And he said that there are any number of catastrophes, significant events that could change things, black swan events, if you will, that will change things and lead to calls for greater global intervention. We're seeing it in the financial sector where people are saying, well, because the banks in Europe are failing, Italy wants a 40 billion euro bailout. The head of Deutsche Bank wants a 150 billion euro bank bailout. They're calling for greater global intervention, global rules to run the economy, and terror events like what we saw in Nice just last night, as we record this on the 15th of July, could be the event that brings that one world government to pass.
It could be that catalyst. And you look at it also with the whole global direction this is going. And then you throw into it, you have Agenda 2030, and we have the TPP, which I talk about in my book, and I'll be bringing up in one of the messages that I'm going to be doing here. But you look at this, there is a plan that's already in place to bring about this global government. And it's alarming. Involved in this is the Pope. Mm-hmm. Involved in this are most of the leaders of the world, whether it be the Western world or other parts of the world, but Europe and the United States are driving this. And we're also watching at the same time what's happening with Israel and this attempt to bring peace in Jerusalem, divide the land of Jerusalem. It is pretty unbelievable that all of these things are happening at the exact same time. But as I look at it, Derek, I can go back just 6 months. And I remember 6 months ago thinking about the events that were happening and thinking, I can't believe how fast things are going. But you look at it now, and it's every day I wake up, and the first thing I do is look at the news to see what happened while I was asleep that is driving this into a new world order, that's driving it into a revived Roman Empire. What is going on?
Right.
And looking at these things, man, it is crazy what's taking place.
Well, it's astonishing when you look at prophecy tells us that there's a day coming where you'll have to take a mark in the back of your hand or your forehead, or you won't be able to buy or sell. What are we seeing from global bankers and economists now? Calls that we need to eliminate cash because the only people who use large denomination bills are drug lords, terrorists, and tax cheats.
Yeah.
And just this past week, the announcement of a new Bitcoin-like digital currency technology to be used by bankers and traders. They're pushing us in this direction where we must depend on a global government to control the currency, to control our security. The other point that you mentioned that I think is important, one of your talks deals with Israel.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Pope and the Vatican's call for greater government control over the global economy, the global environment, how we approach the environment. It's been known for years that the Vatican has been working behind the scenes to try to gain control over holy sites, Christian holy sites, in the Holy Land.
Yes.
Not least of which, of course, is the Temple Mount. Your talk, is God done with Israel? What do you see coming? What plan does God still have for Israel?
Well, God's definitely not done with Israel. In fact, I deal with that, lay out the foundation of Israel going all the way back to the covenant that God had with Abram. God is the one who's faithful. It's not about the Jews being faithful, just like with me as being a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. God's covenant is with his Son, and since I received the Son, I'm saved. I'm going to heaven.
Right.
I'm not a perfect person, but I'm better since I've come to Christ. With the Jews, it's not about them being perfect. And so you have a lot of anti-Semitism and replacement theology because, well, the Jews have done this and the Jews have run the porn industry or all of the big bankers are Jews, all of these things. Has nothing to do with that. God had a covenant with Abram, Isaac, Jacob, David, right on through to the Lord Jesus Christ. And because of that covenant, God is faithful. In Ezekiel 36, God says, I'm going to do this because my name is on the covenant. I'm a holy God. And I'm telling you, the Jews are going to worship the Lord on high, the Lord Yeshua, in Jerusalem again. And Jesus is going to come back and rule and reign in Jerusalem. And that is exciting. However, the 7-year tribulation period is coming. We know that from what the Bible tells us, but God is going to waken up the Jewish people. It's exciting. And in fact, I actually have a 5-part series that I did on the nation of Israel, going through history right on up to the days of Hitler, up to today, and then on into the millennial kingdom and what's going to happen with Israel in the millennial kingdom. And it's really exciting because it all ends good.
Yes.
And Jesus wins, and it's going to be great.
Well, it's going to be a rough ride between now and then.
It is going to be rough. It is going to be rough. The whole world's going to go through the tribulation, but we know that God is dealing with the Jews during that final 7-year period.
You also talk about final false religion, becoming final false religion. You're talking about Mystery Babylon there, I presume?
Yeah, we're going to be looking a little bit at Mystery Babylon. But what I really am going to do is take the final false religion, develop what is happening right now with the world, things that the Pope has done and things that the Pope is saying, along with the whole ecumenical movement and looking at everything. And again, going into Agenda 2030, TPP, and how what's happening, it's really taking on a religious form and using the environment to drive everything. And I liken that to Romans chapter 1, where the Apostle Paul wrote that they'll worship the creation rather than the creator, rather than God. And we see this happening in our time. And people are buying into it.
Yeah.
The masses are buying into it. They're calling it climate change. And because of climate change, the whole world needs to be involved in this great movement for the better of humanity. It's going to come down to laying down your arms. It's going to come down to control over your own property that you own, what you can and can't do with your own property. There's human rights that are involved in it. There's homosexual rights that are involved in it. But it's going to be the environment is going to be that that tool that's used to shape everything, to get humanity to agree to this final world religion. And by the way, I don't believe that the false prophet is going to cause all of the religions to get along. Because we also know in the Bible that the Antichrist isn't going to go for any other god being worshipped. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be something that's going to develop that's going to be, no. Here's this religious format you're going to worship in. But we're watching it develop, and I personally believe that the Pope is being used as a tool. He may not be the false prophet himself. He may be. I don't know that. I'm not going to predict who the Antichrist or false prophet is. But definitely the things this Pope says are very fitting with the things that the false prophet says during the times of the tribulation that's coming. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not saying he's the false prophet, but we watch everything developing. I believe we're much closer to the final false religion than what most people believe.
Yeah.
And we are watching the mass ecumenical movement and people being willing to lay down everything in order for the greater good of a global world, a global economy, a global political system. Yeah, global religion would be better. Look what's happening. Look what Islam is doing. And then also, I was reading this article not too long ago about one of the terror attacks. And in the United States, the presidential administration released some verbiage that was changed in one of the terror attacks, removing all of the references to being a terror attack or radical jihadist to a follower of God.
Yeah.
And by just putting the word God in there, removing terror, removing Islam, what that does, that equates anybody who believes in God as being a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And that immediately launches us into a world of being introduced to this global religion. Because if you believe in a religion, if you're a fundamental Christian, which I would be labeled as, then that's the category I'm going to fall into, especially anybody who teaches Bible prophecy.
Right.
You're crazy. You're trying to ruin the world, and we're not going to let you do it.
Yeah. No, it is, astonishing. I don't feel that old, but I'm old enough now where I can look back and hear myself saying the things my father used to say back in the day. Boy, I've seen things change more quickly in my lifetime than I ever imagined.
Yeah.
It's the Roman Catholic Church and some of its doctrines that have been adopted, the fact that we've got the first Jesuit pope, but the ecumenical movement, which is bringing together representatives from some of the Pentecostal charismatic churches here
in the
United States with the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
It is something I don't think any of us thought we would see a generation ago.
No. In fact, probably 20 years ago, I would say, a generation ago. Also, I look at this with the whole doctrine of preterism or replacement theology.
Right.
I had a debate with one of my friends who has bought into that.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctrine was pretty solid until that day. That's what I told him. And I said, do you realize that what you are now preaching is Catholic theology? And he said, no, it's not. I said, yes, it is. I said, if you go back in Catholic history, the whole amillennial foundation has led the Catholic Church to be anti-Semitic in centuries past. And I said, what has happened within the Protestant Church is they bought into this. And what you're watching develop within this is the ecumenical movement between mainline Protestant churches, non-denominational Protestant churches. If you believe in a premillennial doctrine. If you believe that God is going to deal with the Jews again, if you if you don't believe in replacement theology, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. And the thing that we need to remember as premillennial, pre-tribulation believers is that we are in the minority.
Yeah,
the,
we are.
Christians,
we are.
More than half the world's Christians are Roman Catholic, and again, their official doctrine is amillennialism.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you add in the Orthodox churches, and so, you know, about 5/8 of the world's Christians, officially anyway, believe in an amillennial view where there's no role left for the Jews except to be removed before Christ's return.
Yeah. In fact, I deal with that really in a lot of detail within the in the message that I'm dealing with on the nation of Israel, in that God is not done with Israel. And then also, even in my book, I deal with it, although my book is called, my book that's out right now is called America in the New World Order. I look at various things that are being set up right now. Mm-hmm. Boy, you can see this coming.
Mm-hmm.
But dealing with the nation of Israel in there, because it is all tied together. You cannot do Bible prophecy and look at the development of everything that's taking place by removing Israel from the equation. Israel is the timepiece.
Right, right. And it's the prize, because it's all going to, if it all focuses on the Temple Mount. The United States, people will argue over whether or not the U.S. is still relevant, because it, depending on who you ask, it's either is or is not in Bible prophecy. Some think maybe we're the young lions of Ezekiel 38, but how... What role do you see the United States playing as we approach this one world government, one world religion?
A very submissive role. I look at the United States as being all but surrendering to a greater revived Roman Empire. Whether or not we're one of the young lions of the Ezekiel passage, I don't know. We may very well be, but that's all we'll be, as a protester when Russia and Iran and Turkey invade Israel in the Ezekiel 38 war. At best, we're going to be a protester. We even see that now. I would imagine if Russia were to invade today, Israel today, we would protest. We have a presidential administration that won't do anything other than shake their fist and say, how could you be doing this? That's what they're doing with everything. We've been totally weakened. And so we're watching the rise of Putin. We're watching the rise of China, which is also biblical, Revelation chapter 16.
200 million man army,
Yeah, so you look at these things, but perhaps we'll be raptured. My hope, the reason why the United States really won't play any significant part, is because we'll be raptured. But what I find interesting, Derek, and the point you brought up, the United States is essentially not in Bible prophecy. I believe it's not anyways. You can, you know, try to find it. But you can identify Russia. You can identify Iran. You can identify Turkey, obviously Israel. You can identify Europe. You can identify the kings of the East.
Mm-hmm.
You can identify almost every territory in the world, except for America, North America, Central America. The American continent seems to be challenged anywhere in Bible prophecy, but all of the rest of it, you can detail, find the detail right down to the nation, exactly what they're going to be doing, how they're going to go about it, who they're going to go about it with. You can see all of the global dynamics developing, but America is going to enter into this new world order, and we are watching it shape up. You mentioned technology and the Bitcoin and digital currency. It's coming, and it is coming fast, and it's going to be under everything that you said, the guise of we need to control the drug lords. We can control pedophiles with this type of thing, the technology that's out
there. Because we can track all transactions.
You can track everything. You can track people. You can see, you look at all these things. We're here. We know, I was talking with a friend of mine not too long ago. He says, if you think the U.S. government has information on you, because you should find out what Google has on you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they've got even more than the government does.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tom, where do people follow your program, Today in Prophecy?
Today in Prophecy is found on endtimestv.org.
Okay.
And you can find on various outlets. I believe it also comes up on his channel. On hischannel.com, I have a weekly program that's on there. It's a 30-minute program. It's all related to Bible prophecy. And then I also do a program about once or twice a month. It's called World News Briefing. That's on hischannel.com. And that one actually has 29 million viewers worldwide. Amazing what you can do with internet TV.
Yes, yes.
And then I do have a new program coming up. I don't know if I should tell you about that or not. I'm excited about it.
Well, this probably won't get into anybody's home until October, so.
Well, I'll tell you what then. By October, it should be up. It's an hour-long program. It's going to run Monday through Thursday live. And it'll be internet TV. It'll be on Apple TV. It's going to be on 800 plus radio stations. For the first half hour, I do an interview someone like you, or an expert in their field. Could be an economist, could be a politician, a prophecy teacher, someone expert on the United States, geopolitics. For the first half hour, I interview them, and then I connect it to Bible prophecy. Second half hour, I take live phone calls and talk through that. And that's going to be following the Jay Sekulow's program. So I'm pretty excited about it. And that's coming up, should be coming up in September of 2016.
All right, looking for that. And the website of the 412 Church?
Is 412church.org is the church website, because I also am a pastor of a church.
Right.
Every Sunday morning, I teach right on through the Bible. Just did a series on heaven that's now available too. That was exciting. People need the hope of heaven.
Yeah.
And right now, however, I'm in the Gospel of Matthew. Just going right on through the Gospel of Matthew. And that's 412church.org. And then the prophecy-related teachings, I teach every Sunday night on Bible prophecy. That's live-streamed, by the way. And that's endtimestv.org. Both of those things.
All right. Tom Hughes, pastor at 412 Church in San Jacinto.
That's right.
Got it. And the author of America in the New World Order, The History of Tomorrow, at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you.
You make that easy. Awesome.
No, you make it easy. I said, yeah. Events are taking place in the world as we record this at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference that we couldn't have asked for a better guest to step in as we try to make sense of what's happening, not just from a geopolitical sense, but also from a prophetic sense. He is the director of the acclaimed film End Times Eyewitness. He's a commentator on geopolitics and prophecy for WND and a best-selling author. His latest, When a Jew Rules the World, which really puts into context what we're expecting here on planet Earth. It is our honor to welcome Joel Richardson to the conference. Joel.
It's great to be here.
We had a wonderful conversation when you visited Skywatch TV back at the end of last year. Enjoyed talking about the book and the importance of understanding the promises, the covenants that God made to Israel that have yet to be fulfilled, and the dangers of replacement theology.
Right.
Which pioneers in Bible prophecy like Hal Lindsey saw 25 years ago. So,
yeah.
As I alluded to this in the opening, the situation in Turkey right now, as we're recording this, is in flux. We have no idea what's going on. But that puts us in good company because none of the cable news networks know what's going on either. You were actually speaking tonight, preaching, while this was going on and getting text messages from everybody who thought they were doing you a favor by distracting you from your message to tell you what's going on in Turkey. Are you making any sense of this so far?
At least from what I've seen so far. Yeah, and it was amazing. I probably got 50 texts. And they weren't just saying, hey, guess what's going on? They were saying, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And I was trying to preach. So what I've seen so far, and of course there'll be much more clarity by the time this airs, but it seems as though not the top brass of the Turkish military, but actually some lower-ranking military officials bypassed the top-ranking military officials in Turkey and engaged in this coup, or at least a coup effort.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is huge because, to understand, go back to the Turkish Republic was founded by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the father of the Turks. He established this republic with the idea that this would be the home of the Turks. When he did that, he established this ingenious system of checks and balances to guarantee that Islamists would never take over the country, because he believed that that was a detractor. It was holding the Ottomans back, holding the Turks back, whereas Europe was prospering back in the 20s and so forth, and 30s. And so Atatürk established this system whereby the military would overthrow the government if they became too Islamist.
Mm-hmm.
In 2002... the AKP party under Recep Tayyip Erdogan, he was really sort of the leader, who is now the president, who was just at least potentially deposed. He's been just this juggernaut that has little by little dismantled and taken over every aspect of the government, from the presidency to the prime minister to the parliament to the judiciary. The Islamists have taken over. And then it's about 5 or 6 years ago now, they engaged in this incredible takeover of the Turkish military. It was called Ergenekon, which translates as the sledgehammer. And this was a claim that the Islamist government said that all of the top military officials were engaged in this conspiracy theory to ignite all sorts of terrorist acts all over the country, whereby they would then take over the government. In one night, they arrested a couple hundred top military officials. So they beheaded the military. Mm-hmm. Their final real check from taking over, they put their own people in. So for the past several years, the Islamists have controlled this whole country. Turkey has the largest army in the whole Middle East.
Right.
Not the largest military, but the largest army. And so all of a sudden, out of the blue, and there was some speculation that this could happen, but it seems as though, and again, this is just based on what I've seen so far, some lower-ranking military officials got together, bypassed the senior officials, and
the ones
that
Erdogan had put into power.
That are beholden to the AKP party.
Right.
And so here's this guy, here's Erdogan, who just built maybe the largest palace in the entire world just a few years ago, mm-hmm. and suddenly he's on FaceTime. He's in some country, they say, maybe out of the country, on FaceTime, calling on the Turkish citizens, saying, go out there in the streets and resist the military coup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this, you know, to put this in context, people go, is this a big deal? I said, this would be like if all of a sudden you turned on the TV and found out that Hillary had been arrested. You know, because we go, there's no way that's ever going to happen.
Right.
Everything she does, she wins. We're filled with cynicism. And in the same way, the AKP party under Erdogan, they've been successful. They're unstoppable. And all of a sudden, over and just in a matter of a couple hours, he's potentially kicked out. We'll see how this all pans out. Mm-hmm. But this could be a huge game changer for the Middle East.
Well, one of the things that I've been paying attention to as preparing daily news updates at Skywatch TV is watching what Erdogan has been doing and, mm-hmm. and seeing the credible reports that the Islamic State has been getting support covertly, if not in some cases overtly,
yes.
from the Turkish military. They were definitely running black market oil through Turkey, which
sure.
raised a lot of money for the Islamic State to buy weapons.
Yeah.
There were certain corridors that allowed the Islamic State to bring supplies in from Turkey into northern Syria
yeah.
and northern Iraq.
And it's where all the fighters came. They came through Turkey, through Antioch, Antakya.
Right.
And it was, you know, Turkey let that happen. ISIS couldn't have existed if it hadn't been for the Turkish government.
Right. So what does this mean then for the Islamic State and the future of Syria and Iraq?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question because, you know, on one hand, Turkey did. They supported ISIS. They allowed ISIS to be established. They gave them logistic, military, weapons, everything. Then when they got hurt, they would come into Turkey and go to the hospitals and mm-hmm. get medical treatment. So they allowed it to happen, but then ISIS has started to turn on Turkey.
Yeah.
So there's been ISIS attacks in Turkey. And this is what always happens with Islamists. They always, the Frankenstein that's created always turns around and bites the hand that created it.
The junkyard dog slips its leash.
Exactly, yes. But to understand what could happen with ISIS is to understand, first of all, that Iran and Turkey are in conflict over the heart of the Middle East.
Right.
Iran has been using Hezbollah in Lebanon, Bashar Assad in Syria, and then the Iraqi government, so Baghdad and most of the southern Iraq, which is Shia. So those are Iran's proxies. Iran is doing everything through proxies. Now, they do actually have some military commanders now in Lebanon and so forth that are actually been helping Assad and in Syria. On the other hand, Turkey has been using ISIS in its war against Iran, against Assad, and against the Kurds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, of course, the Kurds always get caught in the middle of this. Now, if the AKP party gets taken out, and if there's a military coup in Turkey, which is maybe similar to what we've seen in Egypt with Sisi,
right.
a more moderate military coup, then ISIS in many ways is on its own. And that increases the possibility that Iran might make a much bolder move in engaging with ISIS. It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I think we're going to see ISIS lose most of its strongholds. They're going to scatter. You know, they're still strong in Sinai and Libya and different places. I think they may lose the heart of their caliphate, and then they'll continue to engage in this sort of guerrilla jihad that we're unfortunately seeing all over the world now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we record this, of course, this is the day after the attack in Nice, where 84 people were killed by somebody driving a truck, a Tunisian. There are two things that come to mind here. First of all, is the Islamic State, of course, and its adherence to the hadiths that where Muhammad purportedly said the end would come when Rome landed either at Dabiq, which is the town, little village northeast of Aleppo, or at the valley, the Amak Valley in southern Turkey. And it's not a coincidence that the Islamic State's official magazine is titled Dabiq, but their news agency is the Al-Amak News Agency, one or the other. If they lose this stronghold in northern Syria, how does that affect their belief that the caliphate will succeed?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. But you know, apocalyptic, they modify, they tack into the wind, and so it would be the apocalypse delayed. I'm sure they would say we almost had it, but this might not actually be the time that we thought, but we'll gain it back. That would be my guess. But and you know, I agree with you, by the way, with regard to the hadith. I mean, obviously, I don't give any prophetic value to any Islamic prophecies.
Right.
But the point is that they believe. Were these things prophesied by Muhammad? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. Scholarship would say they probably came much later. But the point is that that doesn't diminish the satanic hand in the history of the development and the evolution of these prophecies, which lead these Islamists to believe they're in the last days, which fuel them with an urgency to accomplish what they've accomplished. And so, you know, ISIS is thoroughly driven by their apocalyptic prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, does the church understand what's unfolding and how that applies to biblical prophecy?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the real stuff that we need to be paying attention to. But unfortunately, so much of the church today is just in la-la land. They're not in touch with the words of the biblical prophets.
Mm. Well, in 15 seconds there, you just summarized my entire one-hour talk for tomorrow. So thank you,
there you go.
For Sunday. The other thing that came to mind, though, is you mentioned the Kurds and the fact that they always get the short end of the stick. They did after the first Gulf War, where we promised them support and then we abandoned them to Saddam Hussein. And they're getting the short end of it again. Along with the oldest Christian communities in the world, the Christian communities of the Nineveh Plain, the Assyrians, Christians, who have been abandoned and very nearly wiped out. If the Islamic State no longer has Turkey to fall back on, is it possible the Kurds, who make up a majority of the population in southeastern Turkey, northern Syria, northern Iraq, western Iran, do they perhaps become emboldened enough to make a move?
If the AKP party falls to this coup, this could be fantastic news for the Kurdish people. You know, the Kurdish people, as you said, they've been persecuted by the Persians. They've been persecuted by the Arabs. They've been persecuted by the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been up there in northern Iraq and Kurdistan. And, you know, the Kurds have a saying, the mountains up there are stunning. You know, we're out here in Colorado. These are the Rockies. These are beautiful. Believe it or not, those mountains in northern Iraq, it's like something out of The Hobbit. I mean, it's magical.
Mm.
But so when you get up there, you understand that the Kurds have a saying, the Kurds have no friends but the mountains.
Mm.
And, you know,
This is their history going back, you know, thousands of years. But, I mean, after World War I, when Sykes and Pico decided to start drawing lines on a map of the Middle East, the Kurds were, again, drawn out of the map. That we're just going to include them in these other and divide them up between these other nations that were created out of thin air.
Yeah, and if there is some sort of Kurdish state, so look, the bottom line is Syria doesn't exist anymore. Iraq doesn't exist anymore. I have no question that the national boundary lines in the Middle East, they're going to be transformed over the next 10 years. They already are. But if Kurdistan is able to establish some type of political entity with a government, if they can bring together all their factions and not, you know, avoid the infighting, I think that could have potentially huge prophetic implications. And, you know, because that is the part of the world that many of the prophets repeatedly emphasize as being a hot spot for a lot of the activities of the Antichrist and a lot of those things. And, you know, I don't have complete clarity on it, but I will say this on a positive note. I believe the Lord has a tremendous plan with the Kurds. And you think about when the Assyrians carried away the northern 10 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they ended up in those areas where many of the Kurds are. And I'm sure that there is much sort of even Jewish blood, and I don't know how much this all matters, you know, in the Lord's eyes, but I'm sure that that's part of why Satan has used these various empires in his effort to wipe out the Kurds. I know that there's part of a prophetic plan with the Kurdish people, and that's why, you know, we're just praying and crying out for a revival with the Kurds.
Mm. Now, you talked about the church and the fact that the church is, in your words, checking my notes here, la-la land. What do you see as perhaps a plausible scenario based on Bible prophecy taking unfolding in the years ahead?
Now, this is a bit of a possibility, but I have been looking at Daniel chapter 8. Mm-hmm. Now, I've mentioned this before. I've got probably 150, 160 commentaries on the book of Daniel. I love to survey the broad range of commentators on Daniel. When I look at Daniel 8, the majority position among futurists is that this vision that Daniel had is broken up in half. Half of it is historical, half of it is eschatological, it's end time. But when you actually look at the words of the angel Gabriel, Gabriel says three times in two sentences, he says, "Daniel, I'm about to reveal to you what's going to take place in the last days." And then he says, "It will take place in the final period of indignation." And then again, he says, "At the last days." He doesn't say verses 2 through 8 are historical and 9 through 12 are future. Mm-hmm. He says the vision concerns the time of the end. So if we interpret Daniel's vision in Daniel 8 as consistently futurist, it's not to say it doesn't have historical types and a shadows that, you know, it was partially fulfilled or
already but not yet fulfillment.
Yeah. If that's the case, then what we would see is the two-horned ram, mm-hmm. that's Iran, and possibly even the Kurds, it says the Medes and the Persians, mm-hmm. break out into the Middle East, again, possibly engaging with ISIS. And that's a possibility. And then a massive response from the West, probably Turkey, perhaps some coalition, perhaps even NATO. You know, Turkey's part of NATO, and we're contractually obligated mm-hmm. to support them. So who knows, but this goat from the West comes. This is when we would see major boundary lines, national boundary lines shift in the Middle East. And then if that's the case, we get there, then the prophecy says that this breaks up into four, and out of one of those four comes the little horn,
right,
which I believe is the Antichrist. I believe the little horn of Daniel 8 is also the little horn of Daniel 7. Many people say, no, the Antichrist is the little horn in Daniel 7, but the Antichrist is not the little horn of Daniel 8. I think consistency and just internal, you know, testimony within Daniel 8 says this is the same thing that it's speaking of. And so that would be the emergence of the Antichrist. We could be a lot closer. And this Daniel 8 could be a bit of a roadmap to the emergence of the Antichrist. But I present that as a possibility, not dogmatically. This is something to watch for. Hmm.
There are so many things at play right now. I talked with Bill Salas a couple of weeks ago after he published a piece on his website about the Brexit vote in Britain and what impact that might have on a creation of a revived Roman Empire out of
right.
the European Union.
Yeah.
But there are so many things happening right now that there could be a black swan event that we just can't foresee that could suddenly cause people to say, you know what, global government would be a really good idea right now.
The future has a lot of curveballs, you know. But you know what's amazing, and I'll say this too, because I had a great conversation earlier with Bill Salas. He and I, you know, prophecy teachers, right, we have different theories and different things. We don't agree. But we had a great talk. But what's amazing in terms of what is unfolding in the earth right now? On one hand, you have the emergence of Russia, which some people are saying this is a neo-Byzantine empire. And so you've got folks, you know, that are emphasizing Russia. They're looking at that, and there's a lot for them, a lot of fodder for them to consider. And then you've got all this going on with England exiting, you know, the EU, but then talk of this European superstate. So
right.
the guys that are looking to the EU and to, you know, revive Roman Empire, they've got a lot that they're looking at. And then you've got all this going on in the Middle East with Turkey. And so, you know, I've talked about the possibility of some sort of an Ottoman or just even just a Middle Eastern empire mm-hmm. arising. There's a lot there. And so it's almost like the Lord, I shouldn't say this, but it's almost like he's playing with us. He's given us some incredible stuff to chew on. And this is why we need to be watchful and prayerful and humble.
Exactly, right. The apostles didn't understand the prophecies of Christ's first coming until Pentecost, and they were able to look back with 20/20 vision and say, okay, it all
right.
makes sense now.
Yep.
There will probably be a time when we're all called home and the Lord sits us down at the marriage supper of the Lamb and says, okay, none of you had it right.
Right. Yeah. I'm willing to bet my right arm. I'm putting my right arm on the chopping block and saying, I'm willing to bet everything that I'm going to get a lot of stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And I'll keep my right arm.
Yeah. Joel Richardson, the author of a number of books, including most recently, When a Jew Rules the World. And I should also mention the program that you host, an excellent program called The Underground. Where do people find that?
Well, it's on Jim Baker's Roku Network, which is Praise the Lord Network. But I also just post it on my website every week. And then there's some mysterious Joel Richardson that's not me that has a YouTube channel. And he posts it every week on YouTube. So he saves me time, and you can find it there as well.
Well, that's awfully nice.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Joel, pleasure. And we appreciate you watching. From the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I'm Derek Gilbert.
Take a look at the show notes at vftb.net. That's vftb.net. And you'll find links to Joel Richardson's website and to Pastor Tom Hughes' website. Again, vftb.net for the show notes and for the archives going all the way back to 2009. And don't forget that we are now putting these up on YouTube as well. Some of the videos will have more video than others. Some will just be audio content. The interviews from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference will be audio only because the video will be released as part of the DVD set from the conference. That'll be in October or November possibly, but you can pre-order. And if you do it from Skywatch TV at skywatchtvstore.com right now, Tom Horn is offering the 5-volume Researcher's Library of Ancient Texts. Each one of those books is the size of a big metropolitan phone book, actually bigger. And altogether, those 5 volumes sell for $150, which is slightly more than the cost of the DVD set. So buy the DVDs and you'll get the 5-volume Researcher's Library of Ancient Texts. And that will be, again, only from Skywatch TV at the skywatchtvstore.com. Not much in the way of news that I'm going to pass along right now. Today we are learning about a magnitude 6.2 earthquake in Italy, which is has led to a number of deaths, death toll at least 38 at this point. Dozens are still buried under rubble as of this recording, which is on the morning of Wednesday, August the 24th. So that is a crisis that is still unfolding. As I record this, Rome was affected, but the quake was centered kind of in the middle of the boot as you're looking at the map of Italy, to the north and east of Rome. Again, looks like dozens more may yet be found, and we pray that they're found alive as the people there in Italy struggle to recover from this quake. Also, last night we learned that the Turkish military has rolled across the border into Syria. They are trying to take the town of Gerabalus, which is a border town northeast of Aleppo. It is about an hour and a half by car from the city of the little village of Dabiq, which, of course, has prophetic importance for the Islamic State. So we will see what happens there, because the goal, as stated by President Erdogan, is to get rid of the Islamic State. This may be in response to the bombing at the wedding over the weekend in Turkey that killed dozens of people. The suicide bomber apparently only 13 or 14 years old. But there are also Syrian Kurds in the area who are ostensibly allies of the United States. So while our warplanes are backing this military offensive, we're only backing the part apparently that is going after the Islamic State. And I'm not quite sure how that works. We also have to point out that last week, Thursday, there was a near confrontation in the sky over Syria between a couple of F-22 Raptors and a couple of Su-24 warplanes from the Syrian Air Force. The Syrian planes were attacking a Kurdish position that was being supported by U.S. Special Operations Troops, Special Forces. So we scrambled a couple of F-22s, the Su-24s skedaddled out of there. A spokesman for the Pentagon earlier this week said that the Syrian regime would be best advised not to interfere with coalition operations on the ground. Now, what that means is the United States has put troops on the ground in Syria against the wishes of the recognized Syrian government. Now, think what you will of President Bashar al-Assad, but he did win election. He won re-election after this rebellion, which is being encouraged, fomented, supported both philosophically but also materially with money and weapons by the United States and NATO, the Saudis, and other Arab allies, Sunni Arab allies, that is. So Assad, regardless of what you think of him, is the closest thing that the Syrian people have to a legitimate government. They don't want us there. They invited Russia. The Russians are there at the Syrians' invitation. The Syrian government does not want the United States in country. And we have just told the Syrian government that they had better not try to defend their territory against American troops that are, who are there against their wishes. Now, like I said, think what you will of Bashar al-Assad. He's a dictator, but most of the rulers in that part of the world are, or they don't stay in power very long. How would we as Americans feel if a Russian force landed, say, in North Dakota at the invitation of a Native American tribe that feels oppressed, and rightly so, and then warns us against defending our soil against a foreign invader who was not invited? That's what we are doing right now in the United States. And I just have to wonder, coming back to the invasion of Syria, northern Syria, by Turkey, if this isn't just partly Erdogan's way of striking out and making himself appear strong to his constituency. But also, since he does appear to be cooperating with the U.S. on this hand, while also making nice with Vladimir Putin on the other, that if this isn't a way for the neocons to justify stringing the war effort in Syria along just a little bit farther, hoping that Hillary Clinton gets elected in November, because she is most definitely the neocons' candidate of choice in this election. The neocons who got us into this war as part of the George W. Bush administration. And by this war, I mean the long-running war that's been taking place in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, now spread to Syria. They don't have any political loyalty to any particular political party. They are more than happy to switch from Republican to Democrat if they feel that the Democratic candidate, in this case Hillary Clinton, is more likely to continue their war than the Republican. And clearly, Donald Trump, well, the reason he won the primary in large part is because he spoke out against these endless wars that are a drain on our national resources, not just money, but I'm talking about the blood and lives of our children and grandchildren. I mean, think about it. The main reason for the wars are because the dictator in Syria wanted to do a deal with the dictators in Iran rather than the dictator in Saudi Arabia over a natural gas pipeline. And the reason Libya is a failed state is because the dictator there was about to create a gold-backed currency, and the French, this is according to the emails released by Judicial Watch from Hillary Clinton servers, the French didn't want Libya creating a currency that other African states who still speak French drop the franc in favor of this gold-backed dinar. That's who our children and grandchildren are going to die for. A natural gas pipeline and the continued use of French currency in Northwest Africa. Wonderful. Well, coming up on A View from the Bunker, more programs that I hope you will find interesting and informative. This weekend, we're talking to Dr. Aaron Judkins. He is hoping to join an archaeological dig at the Qumran Plateau in December, but he's got to raise about $5,000 in funds to get there. This is being headed up by Dr. Randall Price, who you heard on this program just a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Randall Price, one of the speakers at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. There's a cave at Qumran, or near the Qumran Plateau, that was just recently discovered. And there's some indications there might be some very exciting things in that cave. Aaron Judkins talks about that and how you can help him get there. That program will be uploaded on Sunday. That one will be video as well at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Next Wednesday, the interviews from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, Paul McGuire and Dr. Michael Lake, two of my favorite speakers. Fascinating stuff whenever we talk with those gentlemen, and you'll hear that program, God willing, next Wednesday, August the 31st. And on September 4th, we begin 2 weeks of discussions on a topic that is just back in the news this week. There's an international conference of doctors involved in human organ transplantation. And for the first time ever in the 26 years of this annual conference, it was held in China over the objections of many people who point out that the Chinese government, in spite of its protest, is still, more than likely, live harvesting organs from political prisoners. There's a documentary film that goes into the scope of the problem. The movie is called Hard to Believe, which kind of encapsulates in the title the reaction of most people when they first hear about this. It's hard to believe that this actually goes on in the 21st century. But apparently it does. There appears to be a thriving business in organ transplant tourism from the West to China. Luxury hotels being built next to hospitals to house the patients from the West who can't get organs quickly enough through our donor process. So we talked to Kay Rubicek, producer of Hard to Believe on September 4th. September 11th, director Ken Stone joins us. You'll hear that coming up on A View from the Bunker, VFTB.net, and YouTube.com/Derek Gilbert. This Friday and Saturday night, August 26th and 27th, I'll be speaking again at Morningside Church in Blue Eye, Missouri. More discussion of research that I am pulling together for the forthcoming book, The Great Inception. On Friday night, I'll be talking about Joshua's war against the giants. Stumbled onto some really, really interesting stuff. Stuff that scholars know that's not making it into our churches. And shows that the archaeological and historical records support the biblical account of what was going on. And I'm talking about the spiritual stuff. That's Friday night. Saturday night, talk about Elijah's confrontation against the priests of Baal, or with the priests of Baal, on Mount Carmel, another holy mountain. Carmel, meaning the vineyard of God, or the vineyard of El, perhaps, since it was sacred to Baal. But interestingly enough, it's not just Baal. Well, I'll save that. That's the gotcha. That's Saturday night. Both nights, by the way, these will be live streamed at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. 7:30 p.m. Central Time. That's UTC-5 at PTLnetwork.com. PTLnetwork.com. Check the link for their live streams. In fact, I'll put the link in the show notes at vftb.net as to where you can check it out. But both of those will be archived. So if you can't watch live Friday and Saturday night, you'll be able to see those in their archives after the fact. And I believe I'll be getting copies of those videos so that later on we may be able to make those available as DVDs. So our Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, every Sunday, an hour each on Old Testament and New Testament. And we're reading through the books of the Bible in chronological order. We post those usually by middays on Sunday. This week, we'll try to get those recorded in advance because we're going to be down in Blue Eye Friday and Saturday, not coming back home until probably Sunday noon or later. So we'll try to get those done in advance. But you'll find it at gilberthouse.org when they eventually get posted, gilberthouse.org. We appreciate you giving us a review. If you got a spare minute or two, give us a review at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you find us. And you can discuss the topics that we cover here on A View from the Bunker at our Facebook page, facebook.com/viewfromthebunker. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.